about 233 shipments of oil went to Israel from Saudi Arabia and Emirates and Azerbaijan. But also they support Israel by sending full army, I'm talking about full brigades, of army brigades, and especially to attack, example, the United Arab Emirates, they attack Gaza by air raids. So what we can say, what we can do, I think now it's time to wait and to check if we can go back strategically, and when, what's going on strategically, because on the ground, most of the countries are swimming in the American Sea, and they cannot do anything wrong because United States will sink them. So in this right now, I see that even though the Israelis and
30 seconds, Ali,
they are gaining. Even though the Israelis are gaining some points on the field and military-wise, but I think they are jumping into the unknown strategical-wise.
All right, and on that note, I think both of you being with me, Ali Hami, military and strategic affairs analyst out of Beirut, Zaid Nemra, professor of political science, Beirut University out of Ramallah. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Russia and Iran have a long and complicated history. In recent times, it's become more of an uneasy friendship. But events around the world have pushed them even closer, with the recent coming into effect of the Strategic Partnership Agreement. It covers a whole array of things, from cultural exchange, investment, and, of course, defense. As Russia battles the whole of NATO on its doorstep, and as Iran has recently emerged victorious in its war against Israel, increasingly the two sides see themselves standing side by side in their defense of the emerging multipolar world. Who better to speak about all this than the Iranian ambassador to Russia, Dr. Kazem Jalali. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining me. Are you happy with the recent strategic partnership agreement with Russia? What is most important to you, and is there anything missing that you wanted?
In the name of God. Well, you know that we had an agreement with the Russian Federation since around the year 2001, which effectively lasted for 20 years, and it ended in 2021. But was extended for another 5 years until 2026. Fortunately, In recent years, both countries have worked to design a new agreement and update the existing one, which is set to be finalized in 2025. Naturally, this agreement will open a new chapter in our relations, meaning that our interactions can be more structured and follow a proper framework. Since we prepared the draft of the agreement here in Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran wrote it, and we made sure to propose what is necessary for the relations between the two countries. Our friends in Russia also invested a lot of time enriching and strengthening this agreement, and we believe that today we have a very good agreement as a foundational document that we can rely on, and we see a clear horizon for our relations. I think we have included everything necessary in this agreement for both countries, whether it concerns bilateral cooperation in economic, political, security, defense, environmental, or human rights issues. All of these are included. Regarding regional matters, in addition to clarifying the nature of our cooperation in the region completely, we also addressed issues in the international arena.
Were you satisfied with the level of help that Russia gave during Iran's war with Israel? There's been some criticism that Russia didn't help as much as they should have. Did Russia give you the help that you wanted in your war with Israel?
You see, our two countries have a strategic relationship. The agreement we have states that if either of our countries is attacked by a third party, neither of us can assist the third party. This is clearly outlined in the agreement. Here, cooperation and assistance can be divided into two areas. One is the military sector. I believe that in the military field, we have made significant advancements, especially after the 8-year imposed war with Iraq during Saddam's regime. As everyone witnessed in the recent 12-day war, the Islamic Republic of Iran was able to shine brightly. Our missiles performed exceptionally well, despite the enemy's attempts to exploit the element of surprise. This was because on the Friday when the enemy attacked us, we were scheduled to have indirect negotiations with the Americans in Muscat just 2 days later on Sunday. On the other hand, another strategy was to assassinate our military commanders. However, our military forces, under the wise leadership of the Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, were able to quickly regroup. Therefore, we utilized everything we had learned and what we were capable of in the military field, making the most of those resources. However, in the political and diplomatic arenas, I believe that Russia played a very positive role during that time. On the very first day of the operation and the Israeli regime's aggression against our country, Russian President Mr. Putin had a phone conversation with Iranian President Mr. Pezeshkian. And on the second day, Iranian Foreign Minister Mr. Araghchi spoke with his Russian counterpart, Mr. Lavrov. Throughout these 12 days, the Russian government issued 3 statements which were very strong condemnations from the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs against the Israeli regime and its aggression, as well as a defense of the positions of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Additionally, during a meeting held at the United Nations Security Council, Russia, along with China and several other countries, played a very constructive and supportive role for the Islamic Republic of Iran.
And are you unhappy that the S-400 air defense and the Sukhoi Su-35 jets have not been delivered? Was there an agreement on that, and why have they not been delivered? Are you unhappy about that?
Look, I've mentioned this in other media as well. Regarding the S-400, before the 12-day imposed war, meaning before Israel's aggression against Iran, we had not requested the S-400 from the Russian Federation. However, concerning the other military collaborations and contracts we have, they are all progressing according to their timelines and mutual understanding. Naturally, some of the collaborations we engage in take time and should be executed at the appropriate moment. Of course, the enemies of the Islamic Republic of Iran are making significant efforts to create various challenges and numerous ambiguities about the defense and military relations between the two countries, trying to uncover our secrets. It is natural for us to maintain confidentiality in our military collaborations, and we are working together in a discreet manner. However, what I can say as the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran is that we are proceeding according to a scheduled plan for our military and defense collaborations.
It's notable that the agreement lacks a mutual defense clause. Did Iran want a stronger defense alliance? And has Russia ever offered a stronger defense alliance?
Look, as you mentioned, the agreement between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Russian Federation includes defense and military cooperation. It states that in the event of an attack against each of the two countries, no one is allowed to provide assistance to the third party, the aggressor. The type of treaty that the Islamic Republic of Iran has with the Russian Federation is different from the one that the Russian Federation has with Belarus or the one we have with North Korea. Therefore, this aspect was not included. However, regarding whether there were any proposals from Russia, well, I need to say that sometimes our Russian friends are interested in expanding the members of the Collective Security Treaty. Additionally, at one point, Mr. Lavrov had discussions with ambassadors about creating new military agreements among aligned countries as a counter to NATO. But these discussions are still in the early stages and have not reached a conclusion. Clearly, these proposals were not solely with the Islamic Republic of Iran, but also with countries that Russia felt were aligned with them, aiming to collaborate on security issues and move forward with determination. These were the topics under discussion. However, as the Islamic Republic of Iran, you know that since the 1979 revolution, our entire effort has been to stand on our own feet. We have built our security system and security doctrine based on our national capabilities, and we strive to advance our initiatives according to our national strength. This, of course, does not negate cooperation with like-minded countries. We are working together with these countries, and it could open the door for future collaborations, leading to much more significant and robust partnerships.
And has the West's behavior, sanctions, war on both your countries, pushed Iran and Russia closer together?
Yes, of course. The behavior of the West has indeed brought us closer together, and there is no doubt about that. However, the important point to consider is that the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Russian Federation are two significant countries in the region, and at the same time, influential neighboring countries. Regardless of others' perspectives, we must maintain our relationship in a stable manner. Our outlook on our relations is quite clear. Therefore, the first point is that we are two neighboring countries, and we definitely need to advance and regulate our relations positively. But regarding the point you mentioned, yes, as a secondary factor, I must say that the behavior of the West has indeed brought Russia and Iran closer together. Russia is a country that was more inclined to be close to the West and work with it. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia made efforts to rebuild its relations with the West. Even during the collapse and the era of Mr. Gorbachev, Russia moved towards rebuilding its relations with the West. After that, during Mr. Yeltsin's time, we also see that he moved towards the West to restore relations. In more recent times, we observe that President Putin has also pursued the goal of restoring Russia's connections with Western countries. In various statements and interviews, he has mentioned that they wanted to join NATO and the European Union, but the Western nations did not accept Russia. As a result, the West's treatment of Russia has been inappropriate, as it essentially failed to accept Russia within itself. This is why the Russians perceive that the West is attempting to fragment their country. Additionally, since the victory of our revolution in 1979, The Islamic Republic of Iran has faced challenges with the West due to the mistreatment we experienced prior to the Islamic Revolution. Instead of correcting its behavior towards the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Iranian people after the revolution, the West continued its disrespectful behavior and mistreatment towards Iran. This includes the war instigated by Saddam against our nation, as well as the sanctions, threats, and numerous actions taken by the West against the Islamic Republic of Iran. For instance, as you may know, our passenger plane was shot down by the USS Vincennes in the sky, resulting in the deaths of around 300 of our citizens, among many other atrocities that could fill a lengthy list. So we and Russia share a commonality in being affected by the West. We have been harmed in one way, and the Russians have suffered in another. You can see in Russia that the West imposed sanctions, and similar events that occurred in Iran also happened in Russia. Naturally, this has strengthened our convergence and brought our perspectives closer in the realm of global management. We have both become opponents of so-called unilateralism and advocates for multilateralism, and many other events have occurred that have fostered this closeness. However, in conclusion, I want to emphasize that our relationship is not managed by the West. We must manage our own relations. The fundamental principle is that we are neighboring countries, and any relationship that either of us has had or will have with the West should not undermine the essence of the relationship between these two significant and influential neighboring countries.
And do you think Russia can help you negotiate a nuclear deal and the alleviation of sanctions? Can Russia help with that?
The Islamic Republic of Iran has a clear and transparent stance on various issues. Our framework has been defined by our leader, our president, our foreign minister, and senior officials like the esteemed secretary of the National Security Council. Firstly, we have never left the negotiation table. If you pay attention, especially over the past 22 or 23 years regarding Iran's nuclear issue, we have consistently welcomed dialogue. In fact, because we do not wish to pursue the non-peaceful use of nuclear energy, we have made every effort to fully comply with the regulations of the International Atomic Energy Agency. Therefore, our cooperation frameworks are clearly defined, and it is evident that we are not seeking nuclear weapons. Throughout this process, we have always welcomed our friendly countries to play a constructive role. The Islamic Republic of Iran has never rejected helpful suggestions from its friendly nations. However, based on the specific frameworks we have, which have been announced in advance, we are not pursuing excessive demands. We are not seeking nuclear weapons, and we are not looking to violate international rules. Today, it is entirely clear who has disregarded international regulations. Today, we observe that the Zionist regime possesses several hundred nuclear warheads within the region and is not a member of the NPT, completely disregarding all international regulations, not only international rules, but even basic humanitarian principles have been trampled by this regime, torturing people, starving them, killing civilians, and committing genocide are all crimes that are no longer hidden from anyone, as the Zionist regime has carried them out. Alongside this, the Americans have also shown their support for the Zionist regime, completely ignoring international regulations and rights. As one of the world's great leaders once said, for them, international rules are a disgraceful matter. They simply cannot tolerate them. Iran has always been open to negotiations and continues to be so. However, as our leader and other officials have stated, we do not accept negotiations that lead to imposition or surrender. We cannot agree to negotiations where the outcomes are predetermined, and we are simply asked to sign what has already been dictated to us. Naturally, we will not accept such terms. If all these conditions are met and friendly countries are willing to assist, the Islamic Republic of Iran will never deny the support of its friendly nations.
Do you see the war in Ukraine and the war against Israel as part of the same conflict as the United States trying to retain dominance over the world? And do you see how important is it, do you feel, that Russia, China, Iran stick together and help each other? Is that important to you or not?
The roots of today's crisis are fundamentally the same, and they are quite clear. In the region of West Asia or the Middle East, we observe that the Zionist regime is excessively greedy and is not seeking peace and security. On the other hand, this regime, which was established illegally 80 years ago, has consistently tried to create unrest within the region and pursue its own interests. And today, its greed is evident to the entire world. When we look at the situation in Ukraine, we see a similar pattern. No one is pleased with the war, and everyone genuinely believes that wars should end as soon as possible. However, we must also consider the instigators of the war. Ultimately, the Ukrainian and Russian nations share a common root. They were once one nation, with Kyiv being the capital of Russia for many years, and Ukraine has historically been alongside Russia. What so-called factors lead to these two nations, which originally coexisted and must continue to live side by side, since you cannot change neighbors, being drawn into war and strife? This question seems quite thought-provoking to me. Therefore, when we examine the roots of crisis in various parts of the world, we see that they share common origins, and the greed of international powers has created such a situation for the oppressed nations of the world. Otherwise, the loss of life, whether it involves individuals from Russia or those from Ukraine, is painful and distressing for all nations, and for every person who has a heart and sound judgment. The death of people never brings joy to others, and everyone should strive to put an end to these wars and unrest in the world. However, it appears that the underlying causes that lead to these wars are continuously being provoked by certain powers, resulting in conflicts on a global scale.
And Russia recently asked Iran if they could have to have better relations with Syria. Is it possible for Iran to have good relations with the new Syrian government?
We always consider the Syrian people as our friendly and brotherly nation, just as we view other nations around the world in the same light. The people of Lebanon, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE, all these nations within our region are our neighbors, our friends, and especially our fellow believers. We are all Muslims. Naturally, we feel sorrow for the suffering of each of these nations, and we are concerned, and it is only natural that this concern extends to the Syrian people as well. The Islamic Republic of Iran has never severed its relations with any nations. It is natural that these decisions are made at the highest levels of our country, and thankfully, our officials will make precise decisions with wisdom at these high levels. It is also natural that since we have very close relations with Russia, we regularly consult and engage in dialogue with each other. Special representatives of the Russian government visit Iran, and our officials also travel to Russia for discussions, and we hope to achieve what is beneficial and in the interest of both nations and the regional countries in this regard.
Historically, been a lot of mistrust between Iran and Russia. How much mistrust is there now, and is it important for you to get more trust, and how can you do that?
Yes. As you somewhat indicated in your question, we have a historical background just like all other nations. Our history with Russia is quite extensive, and naturally, it includes both bitter and sweet memories. These memories are ingrained in the mindset of our people, and for us, They run a bit deeper due to the fact that we have endured some defeats as well. And I don't want to delve too much into that. Therefore, these bitter memories exist, yes. But what is important is that we must manage and build our present carefully by utilizing the lessons from the past. It is clear that we cannot live in the past. For instance, during World War II, around 27 to 8 million people were killed in Russia. The blame for World War II lies with Hitler and Germany. But Russia built its relations with the Germans afterward, to the extent that they were even collaborating on the Nord Stream 2 project, which, if successful, would have established a very strong connection between Germany and Russia. My point is that all nations and countries strive to learn from their past experiences, not to forget them, but to manage the current environment for their relationships. We are also doing the same thing with Russia. We believe that the new Iran and modern Russia are carefully shaping their relationship frameworks together. We recognize that this Russia is not the Tsarist Russia. It is entirely different today. And our approaches have become much closer, especially regarding regional and global issues. Therefore, our perspectives have aligned. Now, what should we do? There are many things we can consider. For instance, we should not be indifferent to the public opinions of both countries. Both nations need to work harder, especially in the realm of public diplomacy. Sometimes rumors and issues arise within Iran. We strive to manage and respond to these rumors. But I think it would be better for Russia to refine its public diplomacy and have a plan to engage the Iranian public opinion, the media, and the public in Iran. After all, if we want to manage our relations in a modern way, we need to adopt a persuasive approach. You see, today we all agree that there is a young generation out there. And this young generation is one that seeks exploration. They are not a generation that can be engaged without persuasion. This requires a solid plan in this regard. Currently, our governmental relations are in a very good state. Of course, there is another point here that is quite profound and merits a mention. It is that the two countries need to enhance their private and people-to-people relations. Before the Soviet Union, the people of Iran frequently traveled to Russia. The relationships were natural. However, after the formation of the Soviet Union, due to stricter regulations on foreign entry, these connections became more governmental than personal for nearly a century. We need to work towards connecting the private sectors of both countries and effectively expanding private enterprise. For instance, statistics show that over 5 million Iranians live in Europe. In the United States, statistics indicate that over 2 million Iranians reside there. However, in Russia, which spans 17,300,000 square kilometers and covers one-sixth of the Earth's surface, the total number of Iranians living there is just 11,000. Among these Iranians, the vast majority, perhaps only 400 or 500, are students who have arrived in recent years. These individuals are indeed valuable assets for the future of relations. They represent significant potential. Nevertheless, this number is quite small. On the other hand, the Russians are also quite few within Iran, which means there is a lack of mutual understanding, and we fall under the influence of negative Western propaganda. The West does not want the relationships between Iran, Russia, and China to become institutionalized. This is because it perceives these relationships as detrimental to its own interests, leading the West to devise plans aimed at our relations, creating rumors, spreading misinformation, and meticulously planning fake news. However, it seems that we, along with Russia and China, do not yet have the extensive media collaborations that the West has, which would allow us to establish a large media club among our countries, engage in dialogue, produce unified news, and create synergy. Therefore, this collaboration is lacking. The presence of the public is also limited, and there are numerous conspiracies that need to be contained. Nevertheless, we are making progress, moving forward, and we hope that, God willing, both we and our governments and peoples will have better plans for expanding our relationships.
of my life, does everything with a smile. She's my mother, my sweet mother. She can take the pain away with just one look. That's my mother, my sweet mother. You're the picture in the frame with all the colors of the rainbow. I'm far from ashamed to say I love you so. And here I lay at home tonight. It's late but I can't sleep tonight. Forgive me if I take my time, but I just have to let you know you're so special. She taught me how to pray. We play games every day with my mother, my sweet mother. Even if I made no sense, you listen with patience. That's my mother, my sweet mother. She would sing a sweet song till I shut my eyes and kiss my head and say goodnight. And I feel safe with you by my side. You're there for every step in my life. I'm sorry if my love is unkind. I just have to let you know. If only this was true. I'm in a cold, dark, wet room. I was an orphan, and now I'm 22. I've never known my mom. A picture faded by the sun is all I have. I'm left alone with nothing more but what I am. It's not enough that life is tough when there's no one to call my mother, my sweet mother, my sweet mother.
Good morning to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio. It's very nice to have you with us. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. By the way, you're listening to Iran Radio. In Islam, the ink of the scholar is more holy than the blood of the martyr. There are an estimated 1.8 billion Muslims in the world, which is about 1.5% of the world's population. Due to the birth and conversion rates, Islam is considered to be the fastest growing religion in the world today. We'll start this hour's program with a viewpoint. The program offers an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of Islamic world today. And we round up this hour's program with A to Z of Life. The program presents an Islamic Iranian lifestyle in a variety of ways, making use of the ayahs of the Holy Quran, as well as inspirational poetry and stories.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, Viewpoints. Today is Jamadi al-Sani III, the martyrdom anniversary of Lady of Light, Lady Fatimatu Zahra. So today's episode is dedicated to this holy character. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Liaqat and Sheikh Latifi. Sheikh Liaqat, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Latifi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam to you and to your dear listeners.
So Lady Fatima's role as a mother and as a wife becomes very important. Okay, it might be a little bit ironic to ask a man, Sheikh Hussein, about how Lady Fatima can change the life of a family as a core meaning, but I think that you can help us a lot in this way.
Yes. Actually, you know, when it comes to that core spirituality or the spiritual core of Islam, there is this position which displays itself in certain moments that Well, talking about the Islamic mysticism, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has two set of names. The names of Jalal, glory, and the names of Jamal, beauty. Mm-hmm. So the names of glory are masculine, the names of beauty are feminine. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, and both of these have manifested in different layers of creation. And both of the, there is no contradiction between them. So all this duality thinking comes from our shortcoming in understanding and in reconciliation between them. So when it comes to the role of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, as the brother put it nicely, that they act as a mediation. And I want to emphasize here, when we talk about the love of Ahlul Bayt being part of Tawheed, mm-hmm. is like, let me give you the example of when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted angels to fall in prostration towards Adam alayhi salam. And there is this saying that I don't know how much accurate it is, but it makes sense that Shaitan said, I only fall in prostration towards you.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So he thought the holier than thou situation that I am more of a muwahhid than you. Uh-huh. Now it is God himself telling you to fall in prostration towards Adam. There is a hikmah, there is a wisdom behind it.
All right.
And when Allah tells us, La as'alukum alayhi ajran illa al-mawaddata fil qurba, we should know that part of Tawheed is to obey Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this. When He wants us to love the Ahlul Bayt,
right.
and this is the reward of the Prophethood, who are we to determine what is Tawheed or not? Mm-hmm. This is part of the Tawheed. And now I wanted to come here. When we come to the love of Ahlul Bayt, there is this famous hadith narrated both by Sunni and Shia about Hadith al-Kisa.
Yes.
It shows the gathering of the five great examples and role models in the creation.
Yes.
The Prophet, ﷺ, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Lady Fatima al-Zahra, and Hassanin.
Yeah.
In that hadith,
yes.
the center of the gathering is Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
Uh-huh.
And this is important. Or in the salawat that we offer for Lady Fatima al-Zahra, it says, Allahumma salli ala Fatimata wa abiha. Right?
Yeah.
So this is, it shows, and some of the mystics among Shia,
yes.
and even among generally Muslims, because you know, it's not just about Shia ibn Arabi, who is not yeah. Shia in that sense. He has a spiritual tone in his teachings,
mm-hmm.
they acknowledge this position for Lady Fatima al-Zahra as being the center of the Ahlul Kisa. Yes.
And Ayat al-Tathir was revealed on such occasion.
Yes.
Did
yes.
you know that? I
yes.
mean, Prophet Muhammad paved the way in order to talk about Hadith al-Kisa. It was in Umm Salama's house, I think. And,
yes.
and the story is narrated from the Umm Salama's time, one of the most authentic yeah. narrators of ahadith mm. among the wives of Prophet Muhammad over there. And then one by one they are coming. Lady Fatima is coming. Sons are coming. Hassan and Hussein and Imam Ali alayhi salam. So Hadith al-Kisa is over there. But a Quranic ayah is now over there.
Yes.
Where? In between the ayahs about the wives of Prophet Muhammad.
Mm.
Okay? This shows the whole significance of only one lady here.
Mm.
And that is Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
And what came after it, that
yes.
for certain days, the Prophet, I mean long
yes.
days, the Prophet would come towards the house of Fatima and Ali,
mm-hmm.
and he would say, As-salamu alaykum ya ahl al-bayt. This
uh-huh.
term
yes.
has only been applied
okay.
to Fatima and the family of Fatima.
So
this
to distinguish between...
Yes.
Two meanings of the
yeah.
Ahlul Bayt. Ahlul Bayt could be
yes.
could be the household or
mm.
could be the people of the house. Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Now Fatima is a mind Ahlul Bayt.
Ahlul Bayt. Throughout history, you do not find any faction of Muslims.
Yes.
Of any such relation to the Prophet to claim that we are the Ahlul Bayt.
Mm-hmm.
Only Banu Fatima.
Yes.
And everybody else knew that this is a restricted term for
Fatima
right. and the progeny of Fatima.
Mm-hmm.
So later on, if now some people, they say Ahlul Bayt, no, refer to history and see that people knew their limit. They would not say, okay, we are the Ahlul Bayt. They would say that maybe we are Ummahatul Mu'mineen, maybe,
yes.
yes. These titles
yes.
they would take for themselves,
yes.
but they knew that they cannot take Ahlul Bayt for themselves.
All right, okay. Yes, such a holy, and we miss her, you know, that's it. The sadness has become multiplied because they didn't know this great character.
Yes.
I mean, from birth, that was holy, okay? So look at the prescriptions that are done to Prophet Muhammad. We can say the delivery of Lady Khadija and all this. Okay, it's by divine light. Even the food that has to be consumed, okay, by Prophet Muhammad and Lady Khadija for birth of such a child is really extraordinary. I mean, yes. When you go out to the Islamic references, you find so many details.
So, just like you were saying, the character of Sayyida Fatima, salamullahi alayha, the love of Sayyida Fatima, the care of Sayyida Fatima, everything, I would say the love and the personality of this noble lady is such a personality that it would bring tears. In every single incident of her life, I have seen tears in people's eyes. Mm-hmm. Every single thing. Her care towards her husband, her care towards her children.
How much inspiration people take from the marriage
yes.
of Lady Fatima al-Zahra and Imam Ali.
Yeah. Yes.
And this is a source of teaching for all of the young people in our age. Yeah.
In today's world that so many people want to follow up, we can say starting marriage is a simple type of lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And even the love itself, we should be very lucky to have this love in our hearts.
Yes.
We should be very lucky and thankful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I would say even a whole lifetime of sajda, yes. prostration to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, just that He has blessed us with the love of this noble lady,
okay.
is still very less. It's nothing when compared to the love of what Allah has blessed us with, the love of Sayyida Fatima and the holy progeny and the holy family of Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra, salamullahi alayha. And yeah, I would say no matter how much love we have towards her, it's still less. And this will only increase our servitude to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Okay.
The more the love, the more we get closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So there's, just like Sheikh Hussain has said, the love of the Ahlul Bayt, having love towards the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, is Tawheed, is the acceptance of Tawheed.
Okay.
That is, it is a proof that we love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala by loving the Ahlul Bayt, by loving this noble personality. We love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So without the love of Ahlul Bayt, the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't exist.
All right.
So if someone is saying, I don't love the Ahlul Bayt, but I love Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that person is a liar, clear liar.
Yeah. Yep. Delusional.
That's right. So the role as a mother is really important over here. Sometimes when Zainab was in the court, Lady Zainab was in court of Yazid, was referring to the ahadith and then the text of the Holy Quran, the consultants of Yazid around him said, stop. You better stop, because from now on, you are facing a lady who is really knowledgeable. So, and so many people might say that this lady was nurtured by Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
Yeah.
I mean, even as a mother, as a teacher.
Mm.
So the Quran, in its true way, was taught to Lady Zainab, Imam al-Hussein, and Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. But now the major question is that how in today's world, in facing the oppression, we can benefit from Lady Zainab, Shaykh? Because sometimes we see she was a lady, and she was a mother, she was, for example, a wife, and the emotional things come to the scene, but we do not know that there is also a part of the life of Lady Zahra who is against the oppression of her time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So how to benefit from it in today's world? For example, facing the tyrannies, facing the cruels, facing all these oppressors and zalimin all across the world.
Okay, yes. There is a greater lesson and there are minor issues in the role model or in the activity of Lady Fatima al-Zahra against the oppression and injustice in her time. The greater lesson is that you should not lose hope. Okay, that's a big lesson there, because in the face of all the odds, a pregnant lady, and as I have been telling this here and there, that when we put ourselves there at that time, many people had this calculation that this is not gonna work. Okay, so in that situation, most of us, people like us, would say, okay, it's been finished, and what can we do? Let's just remain silent and do not cause trouble. But then Lady Fatima al-Zahra sees something else. He sees later generations that they come, and if I do not leave any sign here in history, they might think that, okay, everything was okay. They accepted it themselves. If you raise your voice, at least throughout history, you are creating a point of reference that no, there were people who opposed this from the pure progeny of the Prophet. They yes. did not accept. So this is important. You do not lose hope. You do what is your duty to do, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is going to put blessing in it. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is putting barakah in it. Yes. After thousands of years, people will remember that, and they take the message from it. That mm-hmm. is one thing. The other thing is that in the way that you want to be active, Lady Fatimah al-Zahra was not caught up by the emotions. Mm-hmm. This is something that some of the other factions, the enemy, tried to say that, yeah, it is based on the emotions and everything. She was sad because of the loss of the Prophet. Yes, she was sad.
She went to Baytul Ahzan, or yes, her voice was so loud in crying and she had tears. Or she asked, for example, for death or something, they say.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why they want to say that what she did was not necessarily covering the maslaha of the ummah. Those men, they knew the maslaha of the ummah. Okay, this is a big question now here. Mm-hmm. Listen, let's listen. If Lady Fatima al-Zahra did what she did based on emotions, mm-hmm. and those people did what they did based on their calculations, strategic thinking, bring one line like the sermon of Fadakiyah from those people.
All right.
A person that is caught up by emotions cannot deliver one line like that.
That's right.
The sermon of Fadakiyah comes from a point of authority, a point of agency, a person not just knowing something but is in full control of herself and full knowledge of the true message of Islam. She delivers that powerfully, strongly. But then bring one line like that from those people who oppose Lady Fatima al-Zahra.
Right.
No, mm-hmm. you don't have that.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, those who were consumed by power, by the desire for dominance, they're the other side. Lady Fatima al-Zahra shows us that even at the highest moments of stress and instability, she was in full control of her character, her words, and still today, these words are studied as the sources of Islamic, true Islamic knowledge and everything. So it tells us that you should not lose balance. If you want to make a stance, take an action, you have to remember that emotions should not lead you.
Okay.
Yeah, you should have the knowledge. You should have the control of yourself. And then when under those conditions, you make a stance, inshallah, it will remain in history.
It is as if a man is talking to them. I mean,
even not man at that time could not deliver such Arabs. Right. They were illiterate.
Yes,
they didn't know anything.
The words of Ali in the mouth of a Lady Fatima.
Yes,
indeed.
It is not surprised to see that Zainab al-Kubra.
Yes,
she does like her mother because Ahlul Bayt Adra Bima Fil Bayt.
Yeah,
they had their homeschooling, which is
okay. Very good.
Even the thing which Sheikh has pointed towards about the crying of Sayyidah Fatima, like she used to cry a lot, and her voice was a bit loud, maybe.
Yes.
It comes not just from emotion; it comes from intellect as well.
Uh-huh.
We see that Sayyidah Fatima is crying because she lost not the father, not just a normal father. She lost a father who is a prophet. From now on, there won't be revelation. There won't be divine revelation. Mm. The whole connection with revelation has been cut off.
That's right.
This is even if we were to live in those era example, we should cry like Sayyidah Fatima.
Yes.
Now that her rights are being usurped, the rights of the Khalifa of the time, that is Amir al-Mu'mineen, have been usurped. A person should cry like no other day. This is actually the intellect which says us, which tells us and commands us to do. Okay. It's not just the emotion. It's not the emotional factor. Mm-hmm. And even if we were to live in those era, example in the time of Sayyidah Fatima, it is our duty to support her in her wails, in her cries, in her tears. We should come near her. We should say salam, and we should cry with her. Tell the whole world, this is the point of grief. The point where, like, the whole oppression is upon the Ahlul Bayt, that is Amirul Mu'mineen, Imam Ali al-Islam, the way he's oppressed, yeah?
All right.
So, yeah, this is complete intellect. This is complete aqal, according to me, what we see, and not complete emotional factor, yeah?
Thank you. Even her secret burial procession, we can say, is a sign that shows us today that how much we can say a person can be not known truly at her own time, okay? So still today, so many people, we can say, are looking for the grave of Lady Fatima al-Zahra to pay respect. But here in the holy city of Qom, we welcome so many pilgrims, visitors from all across the world, because they believe that paying visit to Lady Fatima al-Masuma in the holy city of Qom might be equal to Lady Fatima al-Zahra till Imam As, inshallah, reappears and show us the true grave and the tomb of Lady Fatima al-Zahra. May all the people got a chance nowadays traveling to the holy city of Qom, paying the visit to Lady Fatima al-Masuma over here. And my suggestion, read out the ziyaratics of Lady Fatima al-Zahra in the holy shrine of Lady Fatima al-Masuma too, together all, inshallah.
Inshallah, inshallah.
May Allah accept your majalis, your du'as and supplications, your donations on this day. Thank you, Amar Sheikh Latifi and Sheikh Liaghat for
Thank
a nice
so
elaboration
much.
Regarding the lifestyle of Lady Fatima al-Zahra. Dear listeners, again, we express our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Lady of Light, Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanullah.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, poor but generous. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on I'm Being Shreya with me, Sister Zainab. And so the title, poor but generous, and you look, this is something that we, I think many of us have actually noticed, and it's we almost have sayings about this, that, you know, we often see that the poor people are so generous, and then by contrast, you know, these are sort of stereotypes, and then people sometimes say, well, you know, the wealthy people will get so wealthy because they're not so generous. You know, maybe it's not totally fair to say that, but for sure, there are some instances where we can really see that sort of thing unfold. And I immediately always think of, for example, our wonderful pilgrimage of Arba'in, where we in Iraq, where we see that some of the poorest people in Iraq are literally preparing almost a whole year, saving up so they can host and provide for all the pilgrims during Arba'in. And, you know, and it is like that in some of the poorer communities. They will literally give, you know, the best thing they have to when they have guests coming around. And so obviously what I should even start with the thing I would say at the end of this of a little recording, and that is that, you know, this is what Islam wants from us anyway. When we're giving to people, Islam loves it. Obviously, we should be, first of all, considering our family, our sort of close and sort of other relatives and our neighbors and friends and travelers, the needy, the orphans. And we should be generous, and we should give of the best. So we shouldn't just, just give a little. If we've guests around, yeah, for sure, we should make sure that we provide something really good for them. And if we're giving in charity, that we give really good quality things. Welcome back to A to Z here on I'm Being Shreya with me, Sister Zainab. And also, so I'm talking about this idea that obviously we've got poor people who are very generous, And I've been talking about the fact that when we do give, whether we're hosting people, whether if we're guests, or whether we're just giving in charity, we should be generous. We should always give her the best. But I also wanted to just mention something about the life of one of the famous martyrs from Holland Defence by the name of Sayyid Jan Bozorgi. Now, he, for example, didn't have much money. And so he had been to, he'd gone to Karbala, I think with some other members of family. And he'd actually brought back, for all the women in the whole family, scarves. And he'd also brought back shirts for all the men. And, you know, for someone who, and this is something that people will do, you know, if we've gone on pilgrimage somewhere, whether we've gone to Mashhad, whether we've gone to Iraq, we've gone to, you know, Najaf or Karbala, if we've just gone traveling somewhere for a holiday, often we like to bring presents back, whether it's just for our immediate family, let's say a spouse, you know, parents, or if we didn't go with the children because the children are older, then maybe for the children or other friends or even neighbors. And so this is typical behavior. But, you know, when we don't have much money, to still then bring back such a, what can I say, a wonderful sort of assortment of presents is quite beautiful. And this is just a reminder that, yeah, you know, this is, in Islam, obviously it's something very good that we give presents to our fellow believers, because we're told that this is one way to sort of strengthen our ties with our fellow believers, with our brothers and sisters in Islam. So it creates stronger bonds, and for sure it also just puts smiles on people's faces. It makes them feel good, because when people, for example, if people bring back presents for us, we feel really happy, because, you know, it's not, and it's not even about whatever we're given. It's just the fact that the other person has considered us. So if we haven't been practicing this thing, that we bring back little things every so often for our friends and family, maybe it's something we should sort of institute just as a normal thing to do, because obviously it strengthens the ties with our friends, with family members, and it just adds to that sort of general feeling good anyway, which is something that we should promote in our societies. Essentially, this is just a reminder for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on Iron Bingish Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Good morning to all our listeners. You're tuning to Iran Radio, broadcast from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's program with our morning news bulletin. Then it's time for our radio productions feature. After that, we have Israel Watch. The program critically analyzes Zionist media reports about current events and issues in the West Asia region.
The headlines: a Palestinian NGO network calls on the international community to declare Gaza a humanitarian disaster area and take urgent measures to lift the Israeli blockade. UN Human Rights Office says Israel has intensified its attacks on Lebanon despite the ceasefire, killing nearly 130 civilians in the Arab country. And also, Venezuela warns international airlines to resume flights to the country within 48 hours of risk being stripped of their flight clearance altogether. The Palestinian NGO network has sounded a serious alarm over the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza. As winter approaches, the network called on the international community to declare the territory a, quote, humanitarian disaster area. The warning came as the Palestinians in Gaza complain